Chapter 6. Jailbreak. The prospect of a kidney sandwich. The barber surgeon's knock. Suicide by paint. Inadvisability of. Angels at one remove. Igor goes shopping. The use of understudies at a hanging, reflections on. Places suitable for putting a head. Moist awaits the sunshine. Tricks with your brain. We're going to need some bigger notes. Fun with root vegetables. The lure of clipboards. The impossible cabinet. On the roof of the Tanti, the city's oldest jail, Moist was more than moist. He'd reached the point where he was so wet that he should be approaching dryness from the other end. With care, he lifted the last of the oil lamps from the little semaphore tower on the flat roof and tossed its contents into the howling night. They had only been half full in any case. It was amazing that anyone had even bothered to light them on a night like this. He felt his way back to the edge of the roof and located his grapnel, moving it gently around the stern crenellation and then letting out more rope to lower it down to the invisible ground. Now he had the rope around the big stone bulk, he slid down, holding on to both lengths, and pulled the rope down after him. He stashed both grapnel and rope among the debris in an alley. It would be stolen within an hour or so. Right, then. Now for it. The watch armour he'd lifted from the bank's locker room fitted like a glove. He'd have preferred it to fit like a helmet and breastplate, but, in truth, it probably didn't look any better on its owner, currently swanking along the corridors in the bank's own shiny but impractical armour. It was common knowledge that the watch's approach to uniforms was one size doesn't exactly fit anybody, and that Commander Vimes disapproved of armour that didn't have that kicked-by-trolls look. He liked armour to make it clear that it had been doing its job. He took some time to get his breath back, and then walked around the big black door and rang the bell. The mechanism rattled and clanked. They wouldn't rush, not on a night like this. He was as naked and exposed as a baby lobster. He hoped he'd covered all the angles, but angles were, what did they call it? He'd gone to a lecture at the university, yes. Angles were fractal. Each one was full of smaller angles. You couldn't cover them all. The watchman at the bank might be called back to work and find his locker empty. Someone might have seen Moist take it. Jenkins might have been moved. The hell with it. When time was pressing, you just had to spin the wheel and be ready to run. Or, in this case, lift the huge door knocker in both hands and bring it down sharply, twice, on the nail. He waited until, with difficulty, a small hatch in the big door was pulled aside. "What?" said a petulant voice in a shadowy face. "Prisoner pickup. Name of Jenkins." "What? It's the middle of the bleeding night." "Got a signed Form 37, said Moist stolidly. The little hatch slammed shut. He waited in the rain again. This time it was 3 minutes before it was opened. "What?" said a new voice, marinated in suspicion. Ah, good. It was Bellister. Moist was glad of that. What he was going to do tonight was going to make one of the wardens a very uncomfortable screw, and some of them were decent enough, especially on death row. But Bellister was a real old-school screw, a craftsman of small evils, the kind of bully that would take every opportunity to make a prisoner's life misery. It wasn't just that he'd gob in your bowl of greasy skilly, but he wouldn't even have the common decency to do it where you couldn't see him. He picked on the weak and frightened, too. And there was one good thing. He hated the watch, and the feeling was mutual. A man could use that.
"Come for a prisoner," Moist complained, "and I've been standing in the rain for 5 minutes."
"And you shall continue to do so, my son. Oh, yes, indeed, until I'm ready. Show me the docket."
"Says here, Jenkins, Owlswick," said Moist.
"Let me see it, then."
"They said I has to hand it over when you give me the prisoner," said Moist, a model of stolid insistence.
"Oh, we have a lawyer here, do we? All right, Abe, let my learned friend in."
The little hatch slid back, and after some more clanking, a wicket door opened. Moist stepped through.
"Have I seen you before?" said Bellister, his head on one side.
"Only started last week," said Moist.
Behind him, the gate was locked again. The slamming of the bolts echoed in his head.
"Why is there only one of you?" Bellister demanded.
"Don't know, sir. You'd have to ask my mum and dad."
"Don't you be funny with me. There should be two on escort duty."
Moist gave a wet and weary shrug of pure disinterest.
"Should there? Don't ask me. They just told me he's a little piece of piss, it'll be no trouble. You can check if you like.
I heard the palace wants to see him right away. The palace. That changed the gleam in the warden's nasty little eyes. A sensible man didn't get in the way of the palace. And sending out some dim newbie to do a thankless task on a wild night like this made sense. It was exactly what Bellister would have done. He held out his hand and demanded, "Dock it!" Moist handed over the flimsy paper. The man read it, lips perceptively moving, clearly willing it to be wrong in some way. There'd be no problem there, however much the man glared. Moist had pocketed a handful of the forms while Mr. Spools was making him a cup of coffee.
"He's going to hang in the morning," Bellister said, holding the sheet up to the lantern. "What they want him for now?"
"Dunno," said Moist. "Get a move on, will you? I'm on me break in 10 minutes. The warden leaned forward.
"Just for that, friend, I will go and check. Just one escort. Can't be too careful, can I? Enjoy the rain."
Okay, thought Moist. All going according to plan. He'll be 10 minutes having a nice cup of tea, just to teach me a lesson. 5 minutes to find out the clax isn't working. About 1 second to decide that he'd be blowed if he was going to sort out the fault on a night like this. Another second to think the paperwork was okay. He'd checked for the watermark. And that was the main thing. Call it 20 minutes, give or take. Of course, he could be wrong. Anything could happen. Bellister could be rounding up a couple of his mates right now. Or maybe he'd get someone to run out the back way and find a real copper. The future was uncertain. Exposure could be a few seconds away. It didn't get any better than this. Bellister left it for 22 minutes. Footsteps approached, slowly, and Jenkins appeared, tottering under the weight of the irons, with Bellister prodding him occasionally with his stick. There was no way the little man could have gone any faster, but he was going to get prodded anyway.
"I don't think I'm going to need the shackles," said Moist quickly. "You ain't getting 'em," said the warden. "The reason being, you buggers never bring 'em back."
"Okay," said Moist. "Come on, it's freezing out here."
Bellister grunted. He was not a happy man. He bent down, unlocked the shackles, and stood up, with his hand once again on the man's shoulder. His other hand thrust out, holding a clipboard.
"Sign,"
he commanded. Moist did. And then came the magic bit. It was why the paperwork was so important in the greasy world of turnkeys, thief-takers, and bang-beggars. Because what really mattered at any one moment was habeas corpus. Whose hand is on the collar? Who is responsible for this corpus? Moist had been through this before as the body in question and knew the drill. The prisoner moved on a trail of paper. If he was found without a head, then the last person to have signed for a prisoner whose hat was not resting on his neck might well have to answer some stern questions. Bellister pushed the prisoner forward and spake the time-honoured words.
"To you, sir," he barked. "Habby arse corp arse."
Moist thrust the clipboard back at him and laid his other hand on Alswick's other shoulder.
"From you, sir," he replied. "I habby his arse all right."
Bellister grunted and removed his hand. The deed was done, the law was observed, honour was satisfied, and Alswick Jenkins looked up sadly at Moist, kicked him hard in the groin, and went off down the street like a hare. As Moist bent double, all he was aware of outside his little world of pain was the sound of Bellister laughing himself silly and shouting,
"Your bird, my lord! You habbied him all right! Oh, yes!"
Moist had managed to walk normally by the time he got back to the little room he rented from I Don't Know Jack. He struggled into the golden suit, dried off the armour, bundled it into the bag, stepped out into the alley, and hurried back to the bank. It was harder to get it back in than it had been to get it out. The guards changed over at the same time as the staff left, and in the general milling about, Moist, wearing the tatty grey suit he wore when he wanted to stop being Moist von Lipwig and turn into the world's most unmemorable man, had strolled out unquestioned. It was all in the mind. The night guards started guarding when everyone had gone home, right? So people going home were no problem, or, if they were, they were not mine. The guard who finally turned up to see who was struggling to unlock the front door gave him a bit of trouble until a second guard, who was capable of modest intelligence, pointed out that if the chairman wanted to get into the bank at midnight, then that was fine. He was the damn boss, wasn't he? Don't you read the papers? See, gold suit, and he had a key? So what if he had a big fat bag? He was coming in with it, right? If he was leaving with it, might be a different matter. Ho, ho. Just my little joke, sir. Sorry about that, sir. It was amazing what you could do if you had the nerve to try, thought Moist, as he bid the men good night. For instance,
He'd been so theatrically working the key in the lock because it was a post office key. He didn't have one for the bank yet. Even putting the armour back in the locker was not a problem. The guards still walked set routes, and the buildings were big and not very well lit. The locker room was empty and unregarded for hours at a time. A lamp was still alight in his new suite. Mr. Fusspot was snoring on his back in the middle of the in-tray. A nightlight was burning by the bedroom door. In fact, there were two, and they were the red, smouldering eyes of Gladys.
"Would you like me to make you a sandwich, Mr. Lipvig?"
"No, thank you, Gladys."
"It would be no trouble. There are kidneys in the ice room."
"Thank you, but no, Gladys, I'm really not hungry," said Moist, carefully shutting the door. Moist lay on the bed. Up here, the building was absolutely silent. He'd grown used to his bed in the post office, where there was always noise drifting up from the yard. But it was not the silence that kept him awake. He stared up at the ceiling and thought, "Stupid, stupid, stupid." In a few hours, there would be a shift change at the Tanti. People wouldn't get too worried about the missing Owlswick until the hangman turned up, looking busy. And then there would be a nervous time when they decided who was going to go to the palace to see if there was any chance of being allowed to hang their prisoner this morning. The man would be miles away by now, and not even a vampire or a werewolf could smell him on a wet and windy night like this. They couldn't pin anything on Moist, but in the cold, wet light of 2 a.m, he could imagine bloody Commander Vimes worrying at this, picking away at it in that thick-headed way of his. He blinked. Where would the little man run to? He wasn't part of a gang, according to the watch. He'd just made his own stamps. What kind of a man goes to the trouble of forging a halfpenny stamp? What kind of a man? Moist sat up. Could it be that easy? Well, it might be. Owlswick was crazy enough in a mild, bewildered sort of way. He had the look of one who'd long ago given up trying to understand the world beyond his easel, a man for whom cause and effect had no obvious linkage. Where would a man like that hide? Moist lit the lamp and walked over to the battered wreckage of his wardrobe. Once again, he selected the tatty grey suit. It had sentimental value. He had been hanged in it. And it was an unmemorable suit for an unmemorable man, with the additional advantage, unlike black, of not showing up in the dark. Every assassin knew that real black often stood out in the dark, because the night in the city is usually never full black, and that grey or dark green merge much better. But they wore black anyway, because style trumps utility every time. Thinking ahead, he went into the kitchen, too, and stole a couple of dust rags from a cupboard. The corridor was reasonably well lit by the lamps every few yards, but lamps create shadows, and in one of them, beside a huge Ping Dynasty vase from Hong Kong, Moist was just a patch of grey on grey. A guard walked past, treacherously silent on the thick carpet. When he'd gone, Moist hurried down the flight of marble steps and tucked himself behind a potted palm that someone had thought necessary to put there. The floors of the bank all opened onto the main hall, which, like the one in the post office, went from ground floor to roof. Sometimes, depending on the layout, a guard on a floor above could see the floor below. Sometimes the guards walked over uncarpeted marble. Sometimes, on the upper floors, they crossed patches of fine tiling which rang like a bell. Moist stood and listened, trying to pick up the rhythm of the patrols. There were more than he'd expected. "Come on, lads, you're working security. What about the traditional all-night poker game? Don't you know how to behave?" It was like a wonderful puzzle. It was better than night climbing, better even than extreme sneezing. And the really good thing about it was this. If he was caught, why, he was just testing the security. "Well done, lads, you found me." But he mustn't be caught. A guard came upstairs, walking slowly and deliberately. He leaned against the balustrade and, to Moist's annoyance, lit the stub of a cigarette. Moist watched from between the fronds while the man leaned comfortably on the marble, looking down at the floor below. He was sure that guards weren't supposed to do this, and smoking, too. After a few reflective drags, the guard dropped the butt, trod on it, and continued up the stairs. Two thoughts struggled for dominance in Moist's mind. Screaming slightly louder was, he had a crossbow. Did they shoot first to avoid having to ask questions later? But also there, vibrating with indignation, was a voice saying, He stubbed out that butt right there on the marble. Those tall brass wasnames with the little bowls of white sand are there for a reason, you know. When the man had disappeared above him, Moist ran down the rest of the flight, slid across the polished marble on his dust-rag-covered boots, found the door that led down to the basement, opened it quickly, and remembered just in time to close it quietly behind him. He shut his eyes and waited for cries or sounds of pursuit. He opened his eyes. There was the usual brilliant light at the far end of the undercroft, but there was no rushing of water. Only the occasional drip demonstrated the depth of the otherwise all-pervading silence. Moist walked carefully past the glooper, which tinkled faintly, and into the unexplored shadows beneath the wonderful fornication. "If we build it, wilt thou comest," he thought. But the hoped-for god never came. It was sad, but, in some celestial way, a bit stupid. Well, wasn't it? Moist had heard that there were maybe millions of little gods floating around in the world, living under rocks, blown about like tumbleweeds, clinging to the topmost branches of trees. They awaited the big moment, the lucky break that might end up with a temple and a priesthood and worshippers to call your own. But they hadn't come here, and it was easy to see why. Gods wanted belief, not rational thinking. Building the temple first was like giving a pair of wonderful shoes to a man with no legs. Building a temple didn't mean you believed in gods, it just meant you believed in architecture. Something akin to a workshop had been built on the end wall of the undercroft, around a huge and ancient fireplace. An Igor was working over an intense blue-white flame, carefully bending a piece of glass pipe. Behind him, green liquid surged and fizzed in giant bottles. Igors seemed to have a natural affinity with lightning. You could always recognize an Igor. They went out of their way to be recognized. It wasn't just the musty, dusty old suits, or even the occasional extra digit or mismatched eyes. It was that you could probably stand a ball on the top of their head without it falling off. The Igor looked up.
"Good morning, sir, and you are?"
"Moist von Lipwig," said Moist, "and you would be Igor."
"Got it in one, sir. I have heard many good things about you."
"Down here?"
"I always keep an ear to the ground, sir."
Moist resisted the impulse to look down. Igors and metaphors didn't go well together. "Well, Igor, the thing is, I want to bring someone into the building without troubling the guards, and I wonder if there was another door down here." What he did not say, but what passed between them on the ether, was, "You're an Igor, right? And when the mob are sharpening their sickles and trying to break down the door, the Igor is never there." Igors were masters of the unobtrusive exit.
"There is a small door we use, sir. It can't be opened from the outside, so it's never guarded."
Moist looked longingly at the rainwear on its stand. "Fine, fine. I'm just popping out, then."
"You're the boss, sir."
"And I shall be popping back shortly with a man. A gentleman who is not anxious to meet civic authority."
"Quite, sir. Give them a pitchfork, and they think they own a bloody place, sir."
"But he's not a murderer or anything."
"I'm an Igor, sir. We don't ask questions."
"Really? Why not?"
"I don't know, sir. I didn't ask."
Igor took Moist to a small door that opened into a grimy, trash-filled stairwell, half flooded by the unremitting rain. Moist paused on the threshold, the water already soaking into the cheap suit. "Just one thing, Igor."
"Yes, sir."
"When I walked past the glooper just now, there was water in it."
"Oh, yes, sir. Is that a problem?"
"It was moving, Igor. Should that be happening at this time of night?"
"That? Oh, just siphonic variables, sir. It happens all the time."
"Oh, the old siphonics, eh? Ah, well, that's a relief."
"Just give the barber surgeon's knock when you return, sir."
"What is the—" The door closed. Igor went back to his workbench and fired up the gas again. Some of the little glass tubes lying beside him on a piece of green felt looked odd and reflected the light in disconcerting ways. The point about Igors— The thing about Igors— Well, most people looked no further than the musty suit, lank hair, cosmetic clan scars and stitching, and a lisp. And this was probably because, apart from the lisp, this was all there was to see. And people forgot, therefore, that most of the people who employed Igors were not conventionally sane. Ask them to build a storm attractor and a set of lightning storage jars, and they would laugh at you. Well, in fact, they would probably laugh at you if you said sausages. They laugh at lots of things. They needed, oh, how they needed, someone in possession of a fully working brain, and every Igor was guaranteed to have at least one of those. Igors were, in fact, smart, which was why they were always elsewhere when the fiery torches hit the windmill. And they were perfectionists. Ask them to build you a device, and you wouldn't get what you asked for. You'd get what you wanted. In its web of reflections, the glooper glooped. Water rose in a thin glass tube and dripped into a little glass bucket, which tipped into a tiny seesaw and caused a tiny valve to open. Alswick Jenkins's recent abode, according to the Times, was Short Alley. There wasn't a house number, because Short Alley was only big enough for one front door. The door in question was shut, but hanging by one hinge. A scrap of black and yellow rope indicated, for those who hadn't spotted the clue of the door, that the place had come to the recent attention of the watch. The door fell off the hinge when Moist pushed at it, and landed in the stream of water that was gushing down the alley. It wasn't much of a search, because Alswick hadn't bothered to hide. He was in a room on the first floor, surrounded by mirrors and candles, a dreamy look on his face, peacefully painting. He dropped the brush when he saw Moist, grabbed a tube that lay on a bench, and held it in front of his mouth, ready to swallow. "Don't make me use this! Don't make me use this!" he warbled, his whole body trembling. "Is it some kind of toothpaste?" said Moist. He sniffed the very lived-in air of the studio and added, "That could help, you know." "This is uber yellow, the most poisonous paint in the world. Stand back or I will die horribly," said the forger. In fact, the most poisonous paint is probably agate and white, but I've run out of that. It is most vexing." It occurred to Alswick that he had lost the tone slightly, and he quickly raised his voice again. "But this is pretty poisonous all the same." A gifted amateur picks up a lot, and Moist had always found poisons interesting. "An arsenical compound, eh?" said Moist. Everyone knew about agate and white. He hadn't heard of uber yellow, but arsenic came in many inviting shades. "Just don't lick your brush." "It's a horrible way to die," he said. "You more or less melt over several days." "I'm not going back! I'm not going back!" squeaked Alswick. "They used to use it to make skin whiter," said Moist, moving a little closer. "Get back! I'll use it! I swear I'll use it!" "That's where we get the phrase, drop dead gorgeous," said Moist, closing in. He snatched at Alswick, who rammed the tube in his mouth. Moist tugged it out, pushing the forger's clammy little hands out of the way, and examined it. "Just as I thought," he said, pocketing the tube. "You forgot to take the cap off. It's the kind of mistake amateurs always make." Alswick hesitated and then said, "You mean there's people who commit suicide professionally?" "Look, Mr. Jenkins, I'm here to—" Moist began. "I'm not going back to that jail. I'm not going back," said the little man, backing away. "That's fine by me. I want to offer you a—" "They watch me, you know," Alswick volunteered. "All the time." Ah, this was slightly better than suicide by paint, but only just. "You mean in jail?" said Moist, just to make sure. "They watch me everywhere. There's one of them right behind you." Moist stopped himself from turning, because that way madness lay. Mind you, quite a lot of it was standing right here in front of him. "I'm sorry to hear that, Alswick," said Moist. "That's why—" Moist hesitated and thought, "Not." It had worked on him. "That's why I'm going to tell you about angels," he said. People said there were more thunderstorms now that Igors were living in the city. There was no more thunder now, but the rain fell as if it had got all night. Some of it swirled over the top of Moist's boots as he stood in front of the bank's unobtrusive side door and tried to remember the barber surgeon's knock. Oh, yes. It was the old one that went rat-tat-tat-tat-tat-tat, or, to put it another way, shaven a haircut, no legs. The door opened instantly. "I would like to apologise about the lack of creak, sir, but the hinges just don't seem to—" "Just give me a hand with this lot, will you?" said Moist, bent under the weight of two heavy boxes. "This is Mr. Jenkins. Can you make up a bed for him down here? And is there any chance you could change what he looks like?"
"More than you could possibly imagine, sir," said Igor happily.
"I was thinking of—" "Well, a shave and a haircut. You can do that, can't you?" Igor gave Moist a pained look.
It is true that technically surgeons can perform tonsorial operations.
No, no, don't touch his throat, please.
That means, yes, I can give him a haircut, sir, Igor sighed.
I had my tonsils out when I was 10, said Alswick.
Would you like some more? Said Igor,
looking for some bright edge to the situation. This is a wonderful light, Alswick exclaimed, ignoring the offer. It's like day. Jolly good, said Moist. Now get some sleep, Alswick. Remember what I told you. In the morning, you are going to design the first proper $1 banknote. Understand? Alswick nodded, but his mind was already elsewhere. You're with me on this, are you? Said Moist loudly. A note so good that no one else could do it. I showed you my attempt, yes? I know you can do better, of course. He looked nervously at the little man. He wasn't insane, Moist was sure, but it was clear that, mostly for him, the world happened elsewhere. Alswick paused in the act of unpacking his box.
I can't make things up, he said.
What do you mean? Said Moist.
I don't know how to make things up, said
Alswick, staring at a paintbrush as if expecting it to whistle.
But you're a forger. Your stamps look better than ours.
Yes, but I don't have your... I don't know how to get started. I mean, I need something to work from. I mean, once it's there, I can...
It must be about 4 o'clock, thought Moist. 4 o'clock. I hate it when there are 2 4 o'clocks in the same day. He snatched a piece of paper from Alswick's box and pulled out a pencil.
Look, he said, you start with...
What?
Richness, he told himself aloud. Richness and solidarity, like the front of the bank. Lots of ornate scrolling, which is hard to copy. A panorama. A cityscape, yes. Ankh-Morpork, it's all about the city. Vetinari's head, because they'll expect that. And a great big one, so they get the message. Oh, the coat of arms, we must have that. And down here, the pencil scribbled fast, a space for the chairman's signature. Pardon me, I mean paw print. On the back. Well, we are talking fine detail, Alswick. Some god would give us a bit of gravitas, one of the jollier ones. What's the name of that god with the three-pronged fork? One like him, anyway. Fine lines, Alswick, that's what we want. Oh, and a boat. I like boats. Tell him it's worth $1 again, too. Oh yes, mystic stuff doesn't hurt. People believe in any damn thing if it sounds old and mysterious. Doth not a penny to the widow outshine the unconquered sun?
What does that mean?
I haven't the foggiest idea, said Moist. I just made it up.
He sketched away for a while, and then pushed the paper across to the awestruck Alswick.
Something like that, he said. Have a go. Think you can make something of it?
I'll try, Alswick promised.
Good. I'll see you tomorrow.
Later on. Igor here will look after you. Alswick was already staring at nothing. Moist pulled Igor aside.
Just a shave and a haircut, okay?
As you wish, sir. Am I right in thinking that the gentleman doth not want any entanglements with the watch?
Correct.
No problem there, sir. Could I suggest a change of name?
Good idea. Any suggestions?
I like the name Clamp, sir. And for a first name, Exorbit springs to mind,
Igor sprayed.
Really? Where did it spring from?
No, don't answer that. Exorbit Clamp. Moist hesitated. But at this time of the night, why argue? Especially when it was this time of the morning.
Exorbit Clamp it is, then. Make certain he forgets even the name of Jenkins, Moist added, with what he later realized was, in the circumstances, a definite lack of foresight.
Moist slipped back up to bed without ever having to duck out of sight. No guard is at his best in the small hours. The place was locked up tight, wasn't it? Who would break in? Down in the well-fornicated vault, the artist formerly known as Alswick stared at Moist's sketches and felt his brain begin to fizz. It was true that he was not, in any proper sense, a madman. He was, by certain standards, very sane. Faced with a world too busy, complex, and incomprehensible to deal with, he'd reduced it to a small bubble just big enough to hold him and his palate. It was nice and quiet in there. All the noises were far away, and they couldn't spy on him.
Mr. Igor, he said.
Igor looked up from a crate in which he had been rummaging. He held what looked like a metal colander in his hands.
How may I be of service, Tatar?
Can you get me some old books with pictures of gods and boats and maybe some views of the city, too?
Indeed, sir. There is an antiquarian bookseller in Lobbin Clout.
Igor put the metal device aside,
pulled a battered leather bag from under the table, and after a moment's thought, put a hammer in it. Even in the world of the newly fledged Mr. Clamp, it was still so late at night that it was too early in the morning.
I'm sure it can wait until daylight, he volunteered.
Oh, I always stop at night, sir, said Igor, when I'm after bargains.
Moist woke fully dressed and far too early, with Mr. Fusspot standing on his chest and squeaking his rubber bone very loudly. As a result, Moist was being dribbled on in no small way. Behind Mr. Fusspot was Gladys. Behind her were two men in black suits.
"His lordship has agreed to see you, Mr. Litvig," said one of them quite cheerfully.
Moist tried to wipe the slobber off his lapel and only succeeded in shining the suit.
"Do I want to see him?"
one of the men smiled.
"Oh, yes." "A hanging always makes me hungry," said Lord Veterinary, working carefully on a hard-boiled egg. "Don't you find this so?"
"I've only been hanged once," said Moist. "I didn't feel like eating much."
"I think it is the chilly early morning air," said Veterinary, apparently not hearing this. "It puts an edge on the appetite."
He looked directly at Moist for the first time and appeared concerned.
"Oh, dear. You're not eating, Mr. Litvig. You must eat. You look a little peaky. I trust your job is not getting on top of you."
Somewhere en route to the palace, Moist thought, he must have stepped into another world. It had to be something like that. It was the only explanation.
Who was hanged? He said.
Owlswick Jenkins, the forger, said Veterinary, devoting himself again to the surgical removal of the white from the yolk.
Drumnod, perhaps Mr. Litvig would like some fruit, or some of that bowel-lacerating grain and nut concoction you favour so much.
Indeed, sir, said the secretary. Veterinary leaned forward, as if inviting Moist to join a conspiracy, and added,
I believe the cook does kippers for the guards. Very fortifying. You really do look quite pale. Don't you think he looks pale, Drumnod?
Verging on the wan, sir. It was like having acid dropped slowly into your ear. Moist thought frantically, but the best he could come up with was
it a well-attended hanging?
Not very. I don't think it was properly advertised, said Veterinary. And of course his crime was not associated with buckets of gore. That always makes the crowds cheer, as you know. But Owlswick Jenkins was there, oh yes. He never cut a throat, but he bled the city drop by drop.
Veterinary had removed and eaten the whole of the white of the egg, leaving the yolk glowing and unsullied. What would I have done if I was Veterinary and found my prison was about to become a laughing stock? There's nothing like laughter for undermining authority, Moist thought. More importantly, what would he have done if he was him, which, of course, he is? You'd hang someone else, that's what you'd do. You'd find some wretch of the right general shape who was waiting in the slammer for the hemp fandango and cut him a deal. Oh, he'd hang right enough, but under the name of Owlswick Jenkins. News would get out that the stand-in had been pardoned but died accidentally or something, and his dear old mum or his wife and kids would get an anonymous bag of wonga and escape a little bit of shame. Then the crowd would get their hanging. Now, with any luck, Bellister had a job washing spittoons. Justice or something vaguely similar would be seen to be done, and the message would be sent out that crimes against the city should be contemplated exclusively by those with cast-iron necks, and even then only maybe. Moist realised he was touching his own neck. Sometimes he woke up in the night even now, just a moment after the void opened under his feet. Veterinary was looking at him. It wasn't exactly a smile on his face, but Moist got the nape-twitching feeling that, when he tried to think like Veterinary, his lordship slid in on those thoughts like some big black spider on a bunch of bananas and scuttled around where he shouldn't. And the certainty hit him. Owlswick wouldn't have died anyway. Not with a talent like that. He would have dropped through the trapdoor to a new life, just as Moist had. He'd have woken up to be given the angel offer, which for Owlswick would have been a nice light room somewhere, three meals a day, his potty emptied on demand, and all the ink he wanted. From an Owlswick point of view, he'd be getting heaven. And Veterinary would get the world's best forger, working for the city. Oh, damn. I'm right in his way. I'm in Veterinary's way. The orange-gold ball of the rejected yoke glowed on Vetinari's plate. "Your wonderful plans for paper money are progressing," said his lordship. "I'm hearing such a lot about them." "What? Oh, yes. I'd like to put your head on a dollar bill, please." "But of course. A good place to put a head, considering all the places a head might be put." "Like a spike, yeah." "He needs me," Moist thought, as the totally not a threat sank in. "But how much?" "Look, possibly your fertile mind can assist me with a little puzzle, Mr. Lipvig." Vetinari dabbed at his lips and pushed back his chair. "Do follow me. Drumnot, please bring the ring, and the tongs, of course, just in case." He led the way out onto the balcony, trailed by Moist, and leaned on the balustrade with his back to the foggy city. "Still a lot of cloud about, but I think the sun should break through at any time, don't you think?" he said. Moist glanced up at the sky. There was a patch of pale gold among the billows, like the yolk of an egg. What was the man doing? "Pretty soon, yes," he ventured. The secretary handed Vetinari a small box. "That's the box for your signet ring," said Moist. "Well done, Mr. Lipvig, observant as ever. Do take it." Guardedly, Moist picked up the ring. It was black, and had an odd, organic feel to it. The V seemed to stare at him. "Do you notice anything unusual about it?" said Vetinari, watching him carefully. "Feels warm," said Moist. "Yes, it does, doesn't it?" said Vetinari. "That is because it is made of stygium. It's called a metal, but I strongly believe that it is an alloy, and a magically constructed one at that. The dwarfs sometimes find it in the Loco region, and it is extremely expensive. One day I shall write a monograph on its fascinating history, but for now, all I will say is that it is usually only of interest to those who, by inclination or lifestyle, move in darkness. And also, of course, to those who find a life without danger hardly worth living. It can kill, you see. In direct sunshine, it heats within a few seconds to a temperature that will melt iron. No one knows why." Moist glanced up at the hazy sky. The boiled egg glow of the sun drifted into another bank of fog. The ring cooled. "Occasionally, there is a fad among young assassins for stygium rings. Classically, they wear an ornate black glove over the ring during the day. It's all about risk, Mr. Lipvig. It's about living with death in your pocket. I swear, there are people who will pull a tiger's tail for mischief. Of course, people who are interested in coolth rather than danger just wear the glove. Be that as it may, less than 2 weeks ago, the only man in the city who carries a stock of stygium and knows how to work it was murdered late at night. The murderer dropped a peppermint bomb afterward. Who do you think did it?" "I'm not going to look up," thought Moist. "This is just a game. He wants me to sweat." "What was taken?" he said. "The watch does not know, because, you see, what was taken was de facto not there." "All right. What was left behind?" said Moist, and thought, "He's not looking at the sky either." "Some gems and a few ounces of stygium in the safe," said Vetinari. "You didn't ask how the man was killed." "How was crossbow shot to the head while he was seated?" "Is this exciting, Mr. Lipvig?" "Hitman, then," said Moist desperately. "It was planned, because he'd brought the bomb. Maybe the dead man didn't pay a debt. Perhaps he was a fence and tried to pull a scam. There's not enough information." "There never is," said Vetinari. "My cap comes back from the cleaners, subtly changed, and a young man who works there dies in a brawl. A former gardener here comes in the dead of night to buy a rather worn pair of Drumnot's old boots. Why? Perhaps we shall never know. Why was a picture of myself stolen from the Royal Art Gallery last month? Who benefits? Why was this stygium left in the safe? Good question. The key was in the man's pocket. So, what is our motive? Not enough information. Revenge? Silence?
Maybe he's made something he shouldn't. Can you make a dagger out of this stuff?
Ah, I think you are getting warm, Mr. Lipwig. Not about a weapon, because accretions of stygium much bigger than a ring tend to explode without warning. But he was a rather greedy man, that is true.
An argument over something, said Moist.
Yes, I am getting warm, thank you. And what are the tongs for? To pick it up after it's dropped through my hand?
The light was growing. He could see faint shadows on the wall. He felt the sweat trickle down his spine.
An interesting thought. Do give me that ring back, said Vetinari, proffering the box.
Ha! So it was just a show to scare him, after all, Moist thought, flicking the wretched ring into the box. I've never even heard of Stygium before today. He must have made it up. He sensed the heat before it, and saw the ring blaze white-hot as it fell into the box. The lid snapped shut, leaving a purple hole in Moist's vision.
Remarkable, isn't it? Said Vetinari. Incidentally, I think you were needlessly silly to hold it all that time. I'm not a monster, you know.
No, monsters don't play tricks with your brain, thought Moist, at least while it's still inside your head.
Look, about Owlswick, I didn't mean...
he began, but Vetinari held up a hand.
I don't know what you are talking about, Mr. Lipwig. In fact, I invited you here in your capacity as de facto deputy chairman of the Royal Bank. I want you to loan me, that is to say, the city, $500,000 at 2%. You are, of course, at liberty to refuse.
So many thoughts scrambled for the emergency exit in Moist's brain that only one remained. We're going to need some bigger notes.